What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me here at the roundtable, I welcome Corey Mitchell. Corey is a mentor, and her interests are family and child sciences.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
Taylor Ballard. Taylor is a member of Youth Shine. She is a student at TCC, and her major is hospitality.
Hello, it's a wonderful opportunity to be here.
Whitney Baptista. Whitney also attends TCC. She's a freshman, and she's into photography and nursing.
Hi, it's great to be here today.
Sandina Caesar, TCC. She's a sophomore, and her major is English education.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. And joining us on the phone is Chelsea Bramlett. She's in Pensacola, Florida. She's a student at the University of West Florida, majoring in social work. Chelsea?
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yes. And Dan Scott hails from Tampa, and he is studying to be an EMT firefighter.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's great to be on the call.
Florida Youth Shine. Striving High for Independence and Empowerment is a youth-run organization with representation from across the state. Membership is composed of teens and young adults between the ages of 13 to 24 who are current or former foster youth in the Florida Child Welfare System. Their mission as advocates is to empower, improve, educate and support the growth of tomorrow's leaders through the combined knowledge and experience of today's youth and supporters. Their goal is to share their stories and experience in order to improve the system of care for their brothers and sisters currently in care and those who have yet to enter care. Normalcy. Normalcy extends to foster care until 24. However, youth foster care have many obstacles. Florida Youth Shine come to the Capitol to advocate for issues important to foster youth. Florida Youth Shine, how did it evolve? That's my first question out to you all. Someone, can you share how it evolved? Corey, since you're the mentor, we'll put it on you.
Well, from everything that I've definitely heard in my past couple years being a mentor, it has just evolved from, first of all, we came from Florida Children's First.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, Florida Youth Shine is their baby. Okay. They said that these kids need a voice. They need a voice, and we don't need to be their voice. They need to be their mm-hmm. voice. And so from there, it just kind of bloomed into this beautiful organization that it is today.
Okay. Florida Children's First is a statewide child advocacy organization that was established in 2002. It created Florida Youth Shine to empower youth to advocate on behalf of themselves and others. So, what is the relationship that you maintain with Florida Children's First now?
Well, I can say that with Florida Children's First, they are basically our backbone in this organization.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We have our wonderful director, Christina Spadeus, who's actually joined us in the studio today, mm-hmm. On the other side of the glass. She is such a wonderful person. She comes and during Children's Week, when the kids are here advocating on Capitol Hill in front of all these senators and representatives, she's there providing them with information on bills and what they need to talk about, the talking mm-hmm. points, and making sure that they have the meetings they need to get to, and all of that. And also, Florida Children's First also provides like fundraising and okay. things for these kids, so that 4U Shine can continue to be the wonderful organization that it is. They are basically, I'd like to think of them as kind of like this like mama figure. Mm-hmm. Florida U Shine can always go back to them and ask for anything that they may need. And they're always so willing to help us out and make sure that all the kids have what they need. And if they don't have it, then I know for a fact that Christina's going to go out there and like bust her butt to go and get it for them. So
now all of you are from the Tallahassee chapter, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And there are, what, 13 chapters now? I read 13 chapters.
Yes, I think so.
There are 13 mm-hmm. chapters. Okay. Why was there such a need for this kind of organization? Go ahead, feel free, Taylor.
It got to a point to where as children actually needed to be able to speak up for themselves in mm-hmm. certain situations. Oftentimes within the system, you don't necessarily know everything that you, I don't want to say are entitled to, but everything mm-hmm. that basically you're entitled to, and also all of the rights that you have. Like most kids don't know that they have attorney ad litems. Most kids don't know that they're supposed to have guardian ad litems. Most kids don't know that they can, you know, report whenever they feel like something's not right with the parent. It's really just a program to let children know that you actually have a voice. It got to a certain point to where as there were so many other people speaking for the children, and we still came upon these problems. And basically, it's hearing the children out and coming up with a solution to a lot of them.
All right. All of you have been or are currently in the Florida child welfare system, right? Okay. Chelsea.
Yes, ma'am.
Can you share some of the circumstances that led you to foster placement?
Yes, ma'am. Within my family, we had several different things going on at the time. And there was some substance abuse issues and as well as an abandonment issue. And that led to an investigation where I was placed into foster care at the age of 15.
Okay. And Dan?
Well, mine was a lot to do with abandonment issues. But I was taken away from my parents, and then the case was began to open, and then there was an investigation involved, like Chelsea said, and that's where it all began, you know, just my mother just, you know, not being there for me like she could, and, you know, Dad wasn't around, so those circumstances led to my situation, and that's what got me into the system.
How old were you at the time?
I was 4 years old, and then I stayed into care until I aged out of 18.
Oh, okay. Now, we have you here in the studio. Share also, because I think it's real important that the listening audience have a feel for exactly the kinds of circumstances and the things that happen that may, you know, lead you to be in foster care. I'll just start with you, Sandina, and we'll go around the table.
Well, it started at age 3 when I was sent over to America to pretty much live with strangers,
mm-hmm.
quote-unquote adoption.
Mm.
And with neglect and a few abandonment issues over the years, I was placed into foster care at 15.
Okay. So you went through that for a while, and then you were placed in foster care. Okay. All right.
Mine started at the age of 2. I was abused and neglected also.
Okay. That was Whitney and Taylor.
I've been in and out of the system since I was 5. It was basically being birthed into the world with the best intentions, but like a lack of means.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's simple. And, yeah.
So there, and I say that because we all come with different circumstances. There are all different kinds of things that may happen. What was it like to be in foster care? Dan?
It was tough. I mean, at times, literally like all the time, you know, you felt like no one was there for you and no one knew what you were feeling. So you were alone a lot of the time, and a lot of times you were lost also.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it ended early because I was able to get into a foster home with a foster parent or with a foster mother. They really loved me, and I was really genuine, and she would care for the kids. So once I got in there at age 8, you know, I still had those problems going on, but I was fixing them. You know, my foster mother, she was helping me fix those. So I was able to get through a lot of those problems, and I stayed with that foster mother from age 8 until 18. So you can see the the time to when I was there, that, you know, it was a really good home, a really passionate, loving home. So it was a really stressful experience, but also a really rewarding and loving and a beneficial experience. Yeah, I know a lot of the others, they may have, like, different, you know, situations that went on while their time in care, and, you know, I can't say that I don't know what they went through, because, you know, like I said, it was a very different emotional experience.
And I understand everybody's experience is very different. Taylor, will you share some of yours? Because I know you said you were kind of in and out and in and out. So what was it like to be in foster care for you?
Well, for me personally, it was always very, very uncomfortable. I don't believe that the system failed me, I would say. I just believe that more could have been done. I've been in, if I can remember correctly, about 3 abusive homes. It wasn't easy. And then having to go to school and, you know, having to live everyday life as if, you know, as if you're supposed to go, you're supposed to go about it normally. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're in, you're a teenager, it's like, oh, that's weird if you're this way, oh, that's weird if you're that way. You don't speak, you know. It was really stressful.
How did you handle that?
I always looked forward to the next day. I just told myself that I wasn't going to let my situation right now or how I was feeling right now dictate to me how I was going to be as a person or what I was going to do to better myself as a person. Mm-hmm. So.
And so that was kind of like your mantra, and that's how you made it through. Yes, what was the most difficult component for you, Sandina, when you think about your foster care placement?
Being a kid.
Okay.
I know, but at 15, it was a hard entering high school and placing into foster care my freshman year of high school, being picked up in, like, these big white vans and and then having to have your 15-year-old friends go through backgrounds and home studies. No parent is going to do that for a quote-unquote friend, and you just can't be a regular teen. And to have, like, someone on the premises, you still needed, like, a background check. It wasn't like anybody was allowed in.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is that you couldn't do anything freely.
To do anything freely, you had to put in a request, which at the most was 4 hours. Granted, if you were on a higher level, it was 6 at the most.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had to take the bus there, which was like about an hour ride.
Okay. Well, hold your thoughts for a moment. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. And this hour, I am talking with Florida Youth Shine. We are going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollifield, and I've got some folks here in the studio with me and a couple folks on the phone. Joining me again here in the studio is Corey Mitchell, Taylor Ballard, Whitney Baptista, Sandina Caesar, and on the phone we have Chelsea Bramlett and Dan Scott. What was the most difficult component for you, Whitney?
I would have to agree with Sandina, which is, like, being a kid. I felt like majority of my life was taken away from me, or I had to grow up fast versus, you know, at, like, the regular rate that a normal child would grow up.
Okay. When you think about foster care, I mean, you all have soared, so there has to be some benefits with foster care. And when you look at the benefits, you're going, well, maybe. But what were some of the benefits that maybe you could identify?
Well, I could go on. I'm going to try. When I came over to America, I was an illegal resident.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with that. My parents, I say that wholeheartedly, started the immigration process, got vindictive toward the end, and stopped, placed into foster care, and was backtracked basically to the beginning of where did she come from, how did she get here, why is she here illegally. And through foster care, I was so grateful to have a legal aid, a guardian ad litem, a judge who would not let me leave foster care until all those papers were settled. And then leaving foster care, I received my green card 2 months after leaving foster care, getting my social and being allowed to work in the U.S. And then leaving foster care, I was able to stay connected with the foster home, got my job, came to college, bought my car, and one of my most accomplishments was moving to Tallahassee to continue education, which I was unable to do because with the immigration process, if you leave county, you have to start the process over in a new county.
Oh,
so
really?
That gave up my dreams of being a freshman in Tallahassee.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, I just picked up and left.
Good for you. We applaud you. Fantastic. Now, this advocacy, why is advocacy so important? Any of you, Taylor.
I believe that with advocacy, it gives people a sense of hope. With us living the way that we do, oftentimes being heard is such a big deal with social media and everything else like that. With advocacy, it lets people know that when there is wrong or when there is an injustice or anything of that nature, it can actually be spoken upon as well as handled. And it also lets people know that you actually matter and you won't go into a situation and accepting less because you know that you matter. It basically ripples throughout your whole entire life. Having a voice can truly change your whole perspective on the distance that you can reach in anything that you do.
What are some of the things that you do to advocate? What do you do? And that's to all of you. Chelsea?
Well, we do several components. Because we do have chapters across the state, we do things at the local level and the statewide level.
Mm-hmm.
Within, like, the local level, we work with our group homes, and we try to make sure that we have, like, members in the group homes where they can teach us what's going on in the group homes, and then we can reach out to our community and inform our community about the issues that we're having so that we can affect change at that level. And then we also have statewide level advocacy where we go to Children's Week in Tallahassee and we work on legislation there to change the foster care system as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
We also do a lot of community education where we do panels and trainings to educate the foster parents, to educate social workers, or to just educate the community with issues within the child welfare system so that we can bring attention to those issues and really impact a change.
Dan, did you want to add to that?
So as you said, we do a lot of the local and the statewide, and we also do a lot of legislative advocacy and community education and trainings and different media advocacy, so where we learn to speak to people on the radio, and we learn to speak to the news reporters, and we learn how to do those things so that when we're gifted with these different opportunities, we're able to speak in a manner that, you know, we're very articulate, and we know how to get our point across, and we know how to do these different things because we've had the trainings, we have the media advocacy trainings, and we have these different trainings where we can better ourselves and learn how to get our point across in a way that everyone will hear us. And we're not just, rambling on. You just, you know how to condense your story and get it out there. And that's a lot of what we do with the trainings.
Whitney, do you feel like people are listening when you're doing your advocacy? Do you feel like the folks are really hearing what you have to say?
Honestly, I do.
Definitely say so. I mean, every time we're up there at the Capitol and we're knocking on these different representatives' doors, and they're always excited to see us, and everyone's, you know, throughout the hall, when you're walking throughout the hall, you see everyone saying hi to you, and, oh my goodness, that's where do you shine? And even on the internet, you know, on Facebook, when you get tagged in certain things, you know, everyone's showing you all this love, and you're like, when you're first there, you're kind of like, Is my point really getting across? Like, do they really hear what I'm saying? And then when you feel that love and you hear all these people talking to you and we're trying to reach out to you, you're like, okay, they're really hearing me. And that makes you really feel good.
That's great. That's great. That, you know, it's not falling on deaf ears. You are the mentor, Ms. Corey. How did you become involved?
Oh, goodness. Well, I currently work for the Department of Children and Families. Mm-hmm. And so one day, there was another mentor who I worked with as well. And so, you know, I saw all this stuff, you know, on her door, and there, we also had a mentor, another mentor there as well. And he would always mention things about it. And he told me one day, he's like, you know what? I want you to meet this group of kids. Sure. So I come to a meeting, and I think that was the first time I met Whitney and Taylor. And they, you know, I listened and I saw what they were about, and I was like, hey, why not? I would love to be a part of these kids' lives and help them be able to get their stories out there. And I can't say that there has been an experience in my life yet that has been more rewarding than this. Because oftentimes, you know, I look at them in awe. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I doubt they see it because I joke around with them all the time. Mm-hmm. But I look at them sometimes and I see them on panels and I see them in front of legislators. And I'm just like, these are not dynamic. These kids. Mm-hmm. Like, this is so great. And I'm always rooting for them in whatever they want to do. And, that's definitely when people ask me, because I bring them up anytime I can, because mm-hmm. I kind of look at them like my babies. I'm just like, oh, yeah, like, you guys should listen to Florida You Shine. Have you looked on their Facebook page lately? Have you seen them at the Capitol during Children's Week? And so it was definitely a great experience, and that's definitely how I got involved. And I encourage anyone else listening, if you definitely want to find a niche to get into when you're really into child advocacy and you really want to help out these kids, definitely look for your local Florida You Shine chapter and get involved, because I mean, we could use all the help we can get. These kids, they do great by themselves, but they need that support mm-hmm. system. And so
now, where would they go if they wanted to connect and become involved?
Well, you can look up the Florida You Shine Facebook page, and from there you can go to the website. We have all our chapters on there. We have mentors in each chapter that are specific to those chapters, head mentors. And you can get their information, give them a call, say, hey, I'm in your area. I would love to help out. Tell me what I can do. And they can go about it that way. I know there is a website out there for it as well.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, this I pose to those of you who are in Youth Shine. When you think about your involvement, what are some of the accomplishments that Florida Youth Shine that you're most proud of since you have been involved?
Keys to independence.
Okay. Talk about keys to independence.
When I was in foster care, I was only able to get a permit. Like, none of the staff were allowed to put me in the car.
That's right.
Okay. And I can't drive a big van. And so when I went in the other day on my spring break down south, and I was surprised to see that one of the kids, like one of the girls, not to say like all the girls had their license, mm-hmm. but some of them had their permit, but she was actually able to get her license, a whole license.
Wow, that's fantastic. And that's a big change that has happened. I'm aware of that. You have any accomplishments or things that you can think about?
For me personally, it's mm-hmm. it's kind of like a personal one that Florida You Shine has, you know, it's an accomplishment with Florida You Shine and me. Florida You Shine honestly let me know that, well, first of all, there are people out there just like me. Second mm-hmm. of all, that everyone works at their own pace. And honestly, just having something to look forward to and working towards is what's truly important. And Florida You Shine has also given me a lot of opportunities. It's also gotten me in touch with a lot of people who could truly change many people's lives. I mean, in everyday life, unless you're in something like an advocacy group, you don't get to meet senators. You don't get to meet state representatives. And if you do, when you walk into the office, you know, and I hate to say it like this, but sometimes you don't always have all the information that they're trying to hear. So you don't really get the courtesy and all that you'd get from being in Florida You Shine.
Whitney?
I would have to say sibling separation. Or a sibling visitation.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of foster youth weren't able to, like, grow up with their siblings, so I think it's good that legislators or Florida You Shine members have helped pass laws against sibling separation.
Okay. All right. Now, you all have shared, you know, some of your experiences and some of the things you do for advocacy. How do these things help the foster care system? How do they integrate into the foster? Can you share how they may be helpful?
Well, the more you speak about it, I guess, the more are listening, as in referring back to the keys to independence. Kids wanted their license in foster care. So now these foster homes are placing someone specifically for what these kids want to do, getting a license, finding a job. Mm-hmm. And if that's what the kids want to do, then why would you stop them for trying to be a regular person in foster care?
Okay. Other comments?
I believe that it's bettering the foster care system because it's basically... it's seeing the problem and finding the solution. You have a whole lot of children who are actually living this day to day, and then you have, you know, people in legislature and everything else like that who couldn't understand it because they didn't go through it. So coming to a solution will be harder. More importantly, a solution that actually works for children. It raises up the awareness and the awareness of the importance of the children within the foster care system by ensuring that the laws that they set forth in the foster care system have the children in mind.
Yeah, I definitely would love to piggyback off of that.
Oh, sure,
Even though I definitely wasn't in the system, but being around these young adults, I call them kids and they aren't, being around these young adults and hearing their stories, I definitely agree with like what Taylor was saying. The more that these young adults say and say, hey, like, I deserve this. Like, I am a person just like your child is a person. Listen to me. Listen to what I need to say. And you saw it like a trickle effect. Like, okay, these kids do need changes. There are changes that need to happen in our system. And these kids are making sure that it happens. And so I really do believe that the way that Florida Youth Shine goes about it, with getting the trainings and things like that to be able to talk to people on the radio and media and talk to senators and things like that, it definitely is helping out our system. I can't go down a hallway without hearing someone say, we need to fix this in this group home, or we need to fix this in this foster home, or, you know, so it's really awesome to see.
Do you know, are there comparable organizations in other states, or is this organization unique here just in Florida?
I definitely think Chelsea would be the great person to talk to.
Yes, ma'am. There are several across the state. There's a national organization, which is Foster Youth in Action, and Florida Youth Shine also partners with that as well. And we actually, Dan and I, were able to go to Washington and meet several of those organizations that are also focusing on issues in care and focusing on impacting the legislation as well.
Okay. Growing up or being in foster care, you know, puts a certain set of demands and adjustments on you. Do the kids have the same liberties? In other words, what kind of restrictions, and I know you shared one at the beginning, Sandina, just about being able to move around and do what you want to do. But can you share for the listening audience some of the restrictions that occur just because you're in the system?
I know a lot of restrictions I had at some of my previous foster homes.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't stay the night at my friend's house. Because the friend would have to get, I mean, not the friend, but the friend's parent would have to get a fingerprint, and the whole, you know, everyone that was going to be in the house would have to get fingerprinted.
Everybody in that? Really?
Yes, all the adults would have to get fingerprinted in order for you to stay the night. And I've never been able to spend the night at my friend's house. Like, my first sleepover was when I was, like, 18, and I had crashed at a friend's house. But it's just, like, those little things. When you talk to your other friends, like, they stayed the night at their friend's house when they were like 4 or 5 years old, you know, multiple times. You know, that's a normal thing. And for that, that was just a shocker. I know also a lot of the homes, but this is more as far as group homes had, like, locks on the refrigerators, and the kids couldn't go in there at night.
Locks and, on the refrigerators?
Yes, ma'am. It's ridiculous. Like, it's
It's so sad and seeing it like that and knowing you can't get food and they will lock their pantries and knowing you can't get food at night. You know, you want a midnight snack or even if you want a 10 o'clock snack or, 9 o'clock snack, you can't because they've locked their refrigerator. You know, bedtime is at 9 o'clock and then dinner was at 8 and after dinner, that's it. Yeah.
Well, what if you had homework?
Well, after school, you had an hour break to do your homework.
Right.
An hour.
Mm-hmm. If you needed longer time, then you get longer time, but that was pretty much the set time for homework.
Well, because I think, I talk with lots of students all the time, and they'll talk about how they were up to 11 working on a paper and doing this and doing that.
Well, with most foster cares, the one I was placed in, if it was homework related and you needed to stay up that late, then sure, go for it. Okay. It's an education. It's something that needs to be done. But if it's just for the simple, I want to stay up on the computer till, no, it wasn't going to happen.
Okay. All right. Now, what happens when you age out? Because I know when we were talking out in the lobby, you were saying that many of the young folks in the Tallahassee chapter had aged out. What does that mean?
You pack up your things and you leave on your 18th birthday.
Just like that?
Yes.
Is there any preparation?
There's some preparation if you're willing to accept it. Finding where you would like to live, what you would like to do. But for the most part, it was, I was grateful enough to have someone guide me through the steps. But for most part, you're just slapped the $800, $1,000 check. Here's your home.
Oh, so you are given some funds.
Yeah.
And then you just have to go, literally.
If you found a place to live, that's nice.
Okay. Well, you're tuned in to 411 Teen, and this is a very informative program with Florida Youth Shine. 411 Teen applauds Florida Youth Shine. We're going to take a break, but we'll return shortly. When minor children or young people are removed from their biological or their other custodial adults by state authority, they are placed with temporary parents or foster parents. Here today, I have young folks who have been in the foster system. And again, I just want to applaud you and say thank you so much for sharing your stories with us. Now, we were talking about what happened when you transition out. Do you have any kind of transition to independent living? Do you receive anything like that? All of you are, over 18? So what
happens? There's transitional living,
mm-hmm.
but not everybody wants to accept that. Because moving from West Palm to Tallahassee, in West Palm there's Vita Nova, which is a three-bedroom apartment or a two-bedroom apartment with other foster youth. But when I moved to Tallahassee, it was six girls in one house.
Oh, okay.
So
it's a whole different kind of setting. Taylor, you were going to share something.
That's something that Florida Youth Shine can give themselves a pat on the back for. We actually have extended foster care now. Mm-hmm. Whereas children who don't necessarily go to school, but they do work, they receive funding of $200 a month as well as their rent paid for. And then you have independent living, which is $1,235 a month, not to mention the school waiver, also the food stamps that you also get. As well as other things. They do try to ensure that when you age out, you're taken care of financially, but in some aspects, depending on which caseworker you're dealing with, they don't always necessarily prepare them in other ways.
Well, you anticipated my question, because I was just going to ask you, you know, what other preparation do you get? Does everybody know how to write a check? Do you have a bank account? Those kinds of basic things that we think about, do you all have those? Are they given, do you, are exposed to that and prepared for them?
They actually, I believe that there's independent living training that they offer. Mm-hmm. Me personally, I'd have to say I probably only been to about one, but from my experience, I don't necessarily think that it's the, sometimes the lack thereof when it comes to the training, but it's about what's included in the training. Oftentimes, we'll talk about something as simple as buying toilet tissue. Is buying toilet mm-hmm. tissue more important than buying that new ring you want or that new dress you wanted? And of course, I don't want to say it like it's trying to dumb it down or anything, but a good majority of us know we're going to want toilet tissue. I haven't really met anybody who used leaves. I just feel like some of those things could be substituted for things like how to go about doing your taxes. Or like you said, I mean, writing a check, I believe they do have a class for that and everything. But honestly, how many kids listen? Actually enforcing that children actually follow through on the training, as well as ensuring that the children get as much as they possibly can from the training and that they're open to learning other things.
Okay.
All right. I think that also touches on how it's different in every city or in every area, because in Tampa, our trainings are a little similar, but, you know, on our trainings, we also, they start at 14, so when you turn 18, you're able to go about life a different way. You're able to have like mm-hmm. those skills that you need to live on your own. Like we have trainings where you learn how to catch the bus, and you go in the mall, and you're able to pick out an outfit, and you learn how to budget. And we also have cooking classes where you learn how to cook, and you learn how to like your different spices, and you know your salt, and mix and matches with your vegetables and your proteins and such and such. Mm-hmm. And so our trainings are a little bit more. And they're also a little bit more enforced to you. Once you're 14, you have your independent living specialist come out to you. And then from then on, you know, you're connecting with them constantly from 14 all the way up until 18. So, all throughout that time, you're going through these trainings also. And so when you're 18, you know, you get your check. And they also help you find a place to live. And once you find that place to live, then you're on your own. And it's also a hard part, too, because you can't really prepare someone to be on their own. You know, you can teach them mm-hmm. how to write a check. You can teach them how to, you know, buy the toiletries. You can teach them how to cook. But you can't, taking a person from foster from the system and putting them out back on their own, it's really hard teaching them how to be back on their own and teaching them, you know, how to live on that and live like that. So I think it's always just a learning experience on its own. Once you get there, you just have to be able to do it, and I think that's a big part of it.
Okay. Did you have something you want to add, Whitney?
I definitely would love to piggyback off of what they said. In talking with the mentors that I started off with, I think one of the biggest issues that I've talked with other mentors is kind of making that same education that Dan was explaining mm-hmm. kind of available to the rest of the state. Right now, I just don't think it's very uniformed in how we teach our youth to be independent. Like Dan said, they have cooking classes and things like here. And here in Tallahassee, you know, maybe a couple classes here and there teaching kind of out of a book. And I feel like it should be uniformed in the way that, you know, we give them hands-on training and teach them, hey, this is how you go about filing your taxes. This is how you measure laundry detergent. Like, you know, mm-hmm. stuff like that. Because I think we often forget that growing up, those of us who were with our parents, that stuff was taught to us throughout our lives.
Exactly.
And with these youth, I think we forget sometimes that that wasn't the case in some instances. Mm-hmm. Like, it was disrupted. And I just really believe that it can be a uniform process across the state. Of course, it will never make up for that time that they could have gotten it from their parents, but right. at the same time, making sure that we send these kids off with the best possible skills and training that they can have to be successful adults, which I don't really have to say that about our kids and things like that because they're all super successful and I think mm-hmm. they're all
they
great.
Are. They're
and
very dynamic.
I can't speak anything bad about yeah. them. So, but I would love to see a uniformed kind mm-hmm. of independent living like situation.
Well, being removed and placed in foster care is stressful and difficult. And it's paramount that the foster kids have what we call normalcy in their placement in everyday lives. I know the Senate Bill 164, the Quality Parenting for Children in Foster Care Act, promotes normalcy for children and youth in out-of-home care and echoes the voices of young people who long to be regular kids like their peers. What does normalcy mean?
It's basically making it so that foster children are granted the same opportunities as any other kid. I know with me personally, I lived in a foster home for about 4 or 5 years. It was a foster home, and she didn't allow me to do a lot of different things. I myself had...
Give me an example of the kind of things you weren't allowed to do, please.
Well... I had never been to a dance. I had spent the night, but it was with certain people that she saw fit for me to spend the night with. And generally, it was for her to obtain whatever it is she was trying to at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't able to participate in a lot of things, like different school performances. Like, I remember I used to sing in middle mm-hmm. school, and we had a Christmas performance, and I actually had a leading role that I was really, really excited about, and the woman who I was dealing with, who was a drunk, she stopped that from happening about a week before. She told me that I was able to go, but then she changed her mind. Now, nowadays, we have things like the normalcy law that, some kids don't know about, but that's what this
mm-hmm. that's
advocacy
what this is about. Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am. But now it's whereas you can actually go talk to your social worker and be like, listen, this is what I'm trying to do. This is when I'm trying to do it. Of course, you have to be responsible for informing them of everything you're trying to do, but it's a lot better than when I was in school and I had to depend on the feelings of my foster parent at the moment to tell me whether or not I was going to be able to participate in these things that I wanted to participate in. Basically, it's giving foster children a chance to be social beings. Right? Not actually coming out of the system as antisocial or mm-hmm. anything of that nature, mm-hmm. you know?
Chelsea?
Yes, ma'am.
Why is normalcy so important?
I think, one of the things like Taylor said was just being able to really teach the individuals or the teenagers who are in foster care how to be social beings and interact and be able to really experience their life. I know, when we're placed into foster care, there's a lot of different aspects that affect how you're handling your life. And, with the normalcy legislation that was passed, I think it did a great job really showing that even though we are in care, there are still experiences that we would like to have. And whether that was, going to a football game or mm-hmm. being able to spend the night at a friend's house, the youth were really saying that, they didn't feel normal when they were in care, and that's why we pushed so hard for normalcy and why we wanted it, the normalcy legislation to pass, because there is so many different aspects where a youth is impacted by being in care, and it's just really important for a youth to be able to experience those things while they're in care, so that they don't feel as though they're being punished for their situation, and they can be able to experience that and really be able to have a lifestyle as a youth and not be as worried and stressed out.
Yeah, to kind of sum that all up, like, how they were speaking about how they weren't able to go to friends' houses mm-hmm. without getting all the parents' background checked. With the normalcy law, now, that's not up to the state anymore to do that. Basically, they're allowing foster parents to be foster parents. They're allowing foster parents to say, hey, if my child wants to go spend the night with Susie, then I think Susie's parents are great people. This is my child right now. Mm-hmm. She can go spend the night with Susie without Susie's parents having to get background checks changes. And things like that. And so they're able to send them off to school dances and able to let them go to the mall with their friends without having so many restrictions like they were speaking about earlier. So that's really what the normalcy law did. It made things normal. Mm-hmm. So it was definitely a really good legislation that passed. And once again, super proud of these kids because they were a part of that. And so,
how are the complex needs of the child met? And I guess I'll direct that again to you, Corey. You are Chelsea. I mean, you know, for example, I'm sure that they may go through a number of changes, you know, maybe feeling guilty, feeling insecure, feeling shame, whatever. Some of these complex needs, how are they met?
Well, I would like to think and say, especially on our end, if they are going through some of those things, they reach out to us. These young adults are super vocal about what they need, what they want, what they're going through. And we're able to point them in the direction of services that they can receive because they have a lot of services kind of at their disposal, which is why the advocacy program is so big, because a lot of our youth don't know that. They're able to go see therapists and psychiatrists and doctors and things of that nature, and they're able to reach out to us. I know some universities have special people on campuses to be able to help them with tuition and things like that specifically for them, and them not have to go through the normal process of being in standing in lines all day and things of that nature. We have people help them get housing and help them get food and things of that nature. So really, there isn't a situation that I don't feel is if there isn't someone in place for that, someone can be put in place for that. So that's kind of how we deal with it on our end. And I bet Chelsea can probably add to that as well.
I'd like to hear from you all any words of wisdom that you might share with other kids who are in foster care about coping, about dealing, whatever kind of thing you would like to share with them as far as handling the changes that they are confronted with.
I want to say it's not your fault.
Okay.
I want to say remain humble.
I would want to say definitely get plugged in. I think my involvement with Florida Youth Shine has definitely been the most impactful thing in my life. It's definitely empowered me and taught me my rights. And so I would say definitely know your rights and get plugged into an advocacy organization where you can impact others as well.
I mean, me personally, I think I would say is everyone works at their own pace. Everyone has their own life experiences and their different reasons why they may end up falling down or stepping up an extra level. But don't ever let falling down or your past be the reason why you never take that next step.
I would say speak up for yourself because you do have a say in what goes on in your life.
In these last couple of minutes, what issues are Florida Youth Shine currently working on? What's in the forefront? What are you all doing right now?
Tuition waivers.
Juvenile records.
We're working on is finding better placement and the continuum of care for youth who are in group homes and placed in care.
Okay. And how do you approach this? How do you do this? You know, I understand the issues, so how do you direct that?
There are quarterly meetings where everyone comes together and they share their viewpoints. Yes, ma'am. And then that's how we decide what we go to the senators and the House of Representatives to go speak to them about when Children's Week does come. But also we have other wonderful advocacy tools like Ms. Christina, who speaks for us pretty much year-round.
Okay. In this last minute, how has Florida Youth Shine empowered you?
It let me know that there were others out there who were just like me, and when I say that in the sense of they wanted to share their voice too, and they wanted to help change the system. And so when I found Florida Youth Shine, I was really shy, and I didn't really know how to talk, but I really knew that I wanted to make a difference, and I knew I wanted to
be able to spend the night at a friend's house. I knew I wanted to be able to get my driver's license or my permit, and I knew I wanted to do all these things that weren't happening at the time. So once Florida Sunshine came in and I figured out what they were trying to do, I was like, oh man, these kids want to do the same thing I want to do. They want to see the system change and they want to shine and they want to show their voice. So I was like, okay, I guess, you know, I'm going to be a part of this and see how it goes. And
when I come across someone who's going through the same thing as me, I don't have to feel as discouraged about the situation due to a lack of knowledge because I know more now about the situation, and it feels good.
Well, I would just like to extend to you a sincere thanks for coming and sharing your story. We really appreciate it. That's it for this hour. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Team podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.